Good morning. Today is Friday. Thank the Lord. The 6th of January. Maybe we'll make it through today, huh? Yeah, cross our fingers. Hope, 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 hope. Joining us this morning, speaking of somebody who relies an awful lot on hope, Miles Slattery from the city of Eureka. Well, you've got like your outdoor jacket on, like you think it's supposed to be wet today?
I don't know. I don't think it's going to rain today, is it?
Or you just don't want to have anybody hit you unintentionally.
It's exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
I plan on doing some Caltrans work today.
It's the accidental that you're concerned about, not the purposeful. Oh, there's messages beneath that one. If you want to, just got to pull that blanket up a little bit. Are you ready for our why do we say that?
Yes.
Slipshod. Why do we say slipshod? I figured you had sideburns nailed.
I hate to say it, but I've never said slipshod.
You've never said this word? Well, yeah, you probably embellish it with a couple of other words that are a little bit more than that.
I can't even tell you what slipshod actually means, but I can give a
inferior work?
Okay. So I would say that that is having to do with knots, and somebody tied a knot and that it wasn't done correctly. That's a good guess, huh?
Yeah, sure. At least as early as the 15th century, house slippers came into vogue. Made without heels and or fastening devices, they did not damage floors and seemed to be easy on the backs of the wearers. Thin felt was the standard material used in making them. Slip shoes, as they were widely called, were designed strictly for indoor use, but careless people often kept them on their feet when walking near their homes, or even on longer excursions. By 1580, it had become proverbial that a shameless person would go slipshod to church.
Well, don't they call those Crocs now?
Felt. You missed the felt part.
Okay, gotcha. No, they put felt inside the Crocs now.
It kind of defeats the concept of being plastic and all.
I completely agree. Okay.
Many persons who wore slip shoes into public places were careless about their appearance. As a result, we still use slipshod to designate anyone who is slovenly in appearance.
See, I think the knot is better because, you know, there's a thing called a slip knot. And so when you do a poor slip knot, it's a slipshod. That's what I was.
Isn't that called a noose?
Could be.
Could be, huh? Yeah. Oh. How do you break in new council people?
It depends on where they've been in their life. You know, Renee had some experience as a city clerk at a previous stop. And, of course, Mario's had some experience with the Eureka City School Board. So in those cases, it's a little bit easier as far as just process and those type of things. They still go through training through the League of California Cities. I think they're going this February. Even Kim's going to be going to a mayor's training for that. But it's more learning.
Yeah, she was bragging she was going to be here this morning. Didn't bother to let you know.
Really?
Yeah, that's what she was giving me a hard time.
Huh? Well,
how can I get on? I said, well, just
show up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Basically, we've got an extra
I'll invite chair. Her officially next time.
Oh, an official invite, so she can officially blow you off.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I think for new council members that are like that, it's the procedural's not so much, but it's more of just operational stuff, you know, what departments do what. And
not meeting decorum and behaviors and
yeah,
that
exactly.
stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But for the mayor, it is slightly different.
Oh, it's a lot different, and Kim is adjusting. But yeah, she even started a council report at the end of the meeting last time, and she
caught
herself.
Is that good or bad?
She just caught herself. She's supposed to do that at the beginning of the meeting. It's called the mayor's report.
Oh, somebody didn't label it properly or use the big crayons?
No, she was just used to chiming in, I think. But she caught herself quickly.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. You don't have a parliamentarian. Is that part of your function?
City clerk and city attorney, more so.
Oh, so they pounce.
Yeah, if there's something that's awry of the Brown Act or something like that.
Or just normal procedures.
Yeah, definitely. City clerk, normal procedures for the most part.
And she knows where the whip is?
Pam is, yes, well-versed in the whip and the procedures.
Good. And her target practice is still pretty good,
I've
too.
Had many of the raised eyebrows looks across the dais many times.
Indicating that?
You're shut up and stop talking.
Oh, really? That's all I have to do?
Yeah, that's it.
Gee, look at Winston. He's getting an eyebrow workout over there. What are most people surprised about that can't happen in session? Public people, citizens.
I think that just throughout the years that I've been doing it is, you know, the public comment, I think it's a more of a back and forth. And some agencies do that as a back and forth. It makes it really difficult because public comment is exactly what it is public comment. It's not public questions. However, some agencies do kind of create a back and forth. And depending on their knowledge of the subject, doing that could be quite onerous. And so we try to avoid that. And so I think members of the public like to come in and they're concerned about a certain agenda item and want answers, and we need to direct them to speak with staff to get those answers. It's not the time during the meeting to do
or during the decision-making process.
Well, sometimes
it's a little after the the horse is out, right?
Well, what'll happen is when people are knowledgeable and they do understand it, and council, you know, gets another bite at the apple when it comes back from public comment, and they'll follow up with staff and ask those questions.
Routinely, do you take public comment under submission and then deliberate and make the decision, or do you take the information, compile it, digest it, review it, and then the next meeting make the determination?
It depends on the item. Typically, for most items, it is done at the time of the agenda item. But when you're dealing with ordinances, there's an introduction phase where they're introduced initially, and then they come back to another session where they're adopted. Unless, of course, there's an emergency ordinance, and then you can adopt. I shouldn't know all this crap, but anyway, when there's an emergency ordinance, four-fifths vote will get an emergency ordinance through on the first time.
So if folks hear that something is going to have a decision made, and let's, you know, whether it's consent or not, and they have concerns, how do they weigh in? If there's no public hearings prior to, and the decision is being made at that moment, and there's no opportunity for back and forth.
So it depends. If there's a public hearing, those public hearings are noticed. So there's certain items like our fee schedule, like some of our zoning code updates, those type of things require a public hearing. And so when the public hearing, everybody within a certain area or even the entire public gets a notice either through our webpage or through the paper or something like that saying there's a public hearing.
What?
A public hearing.
No. It was that other reference. Start with an N. It was a longer word.
Oh,
I just haven't heard that reference
lately.
Excuse
me. I should say an online rag.
It's a...
Murphy's Markets has everything you need to get through your day the healthy way. From drinks to snacks and everything in between, right now, Amy and Brian coconut water is only $1.99. Brew Dr. Kombucha drinks are also just $1.99. And Annie's homegrown products are $2.49. A 6-ounce Yoplait yogurt is only 79 cents. And don't forget about Chicken of the Sea tuna, 4 for $5. Get a boost for your day by stopping by Murphy's Markets. More than a grocer, your neighbor since 1971.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Times, 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Miles Slattery. Miles, there are a number of different projects that are going on during the break. We were talking about the Lloyd Building and that having to come down. I suppose the entire thing has to come down. I mean, if it was URM, you know, even if there are multiple layers, there's still URM all the way through it.
Yep.
When something like that happens, how involved is the city? Do you require or do you enforce or?
In this case, yeah, it's very much like an abatement case. So let's put it on a residential level. If somebody's in their home and we have issues with either hoarding or with people living in spaces that shouldn't be, whether it's in an attic or something like that, it becomes a public health and safety issue. And when that happens, then we have the ability to take immediate action to resolve the issue. And so for this.
So that's like what happened with the Squires building on H?
Similar to that, yeah.
HI.
Mm-hmm.
HI.
And there was a big case in 2010-07 on 2nd Street, kind of by Target. there was a bunch of people living in the attic and.
On the corner, that corner house, somebody died up upstairs, mm-hmm. and they've realized what was going on. Yeah. Across from HTA.
Yeah, mm-hmm. exactly.
I remember certain things.
That's pretty good. Yeah. I'm impressed.
Yeah, how to tie my shoes isn't necessarily call. One of those,
I thought it was you that called because somebody thought through that process that the city owned that property and they wanted to buy it from us. But they were
you
mistaken.
Thought that I called you
no,
for
I'm
that?
I'm joking. It wasn't you.
No. But now I know how to screw with you. So you go through the abatement process, and then is it upon the landlord to knock it down? Does the city come in and do it for public safety?
Yeah, so
what's that element like?
The first option is for the property owner to take care of it, and it's their responsibility. And so we make a requirement for them to take it down. If they don't have the resources to do so, we do it, and then we abate it. So in not as extreme cases when—
And by abatement, you mean?
Well, in this case, abatement is taking down the building.
Okay.
But if there's a case of somebody living in an attic, we, you know, make them, if they don't do it, we'll do it, but make it so it's not accessible.
So you address whatever the situation is.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. So with something that large, 4 stories?
Yes. And a basement, which I hear has some pretty creepy stuff in it. But yes.
Oh, really? Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, too bad you couldn't give tours. I mean, there's got to be some really neat things. Oh, or at least 100%. Just seeing how it was constructed at that time and seeing what the original level of the street was, too, would be all part of that. But when it comes down, it just kind of...
Well, I'm sure there's...
Wrecking ball kind of thing?
Yeah, and I'm sure there's some pretty cool stuff, like when they did the Coast Central, you know, they went in the basement and found a tunnel. So, I mean, there could be some really trippy stuff.
From that location, yeah. I know about... 2/3 of a block away, there's about 70 feet of fill.
Yeah.
So there's got to be some, but it's not safe to go into now, is it?
No. And so.
So does that just get
that's
lost?
That's part of the issue. Our engineers are looking at it. If we do that, there may be a small period of access, but we need to look into that.
So they won't knock down story by story. It just.
Oh, it goes.
Here
down.
Goes one wall, boom.
Yeah. I'm no expert. We can bring in Bob Figus or
that's what I was
or
saying,
Justin Zabel.
Okay, so it's over in 10 minutes. So yeah. But I would think that it would be worthwhile at least to have somebody, maybe I guess the museum.
Well, no,
to
they're
go
aware.
And look, or the property owner. To...
Yeah, the property owner's aware of certain items that need to be retrieved in there, and so we're trying to accommodate that.
Is it local anymore?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. So somebody. Would understand what's going on.
Oh, yeah.
Rather than some investment guy from out of the
definitely
area.
Definitely. We've been contacted by at least 2 community members that know that they have certain things in there that they want back.
Oh, just is it like a storage facility?
I don't know if it was a storage idea or borrowed by the property owner at the time, but yeah.
Well, considering how that hasn't been active for so long.
Yeah, there was some certain levels that were accessed. Maybe 6 to a year ago, something like that.
Okay. So, building's down.
Going
basement's
to
filled.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you got, there's spot there. Now, is that because it's in the Caltrans right away, because it's in the coastal zone, are they going to have to go through all kinds of hoops?
Nope. It's not in the coastal zone.
It's not?
No. North of 3rd Street is the coastal zone in that area.
So they...
And I got North right there, brother.
They won.
The city boy got it. So, yes, 5th Street, which is south of 3rd Street, that is not in the coastal zone, so they won't have to do that.
Does Caltrans have any input?
Not necessarily, because that parcel is so small, you're going to have a hard time getting ingress and egress out of there. So if they were to choose to, let's say, offset a building, you know, off of 5th Street, and they wanted to put... A parking lot or something like that where they'd have to access it from Caltrans right away, then they would be talking to Caltrans. But if they built it...
So they couldn't use the existing parking lot and just extend that?
I mean, they could, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But that then if it had the same ingress and egress, it wouldn't
trigger anything.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then it depends on what the use is. You know, that area, once again, I shouldn't know this stuff, but that zone downtown west, and there's certain...
What do you mean you shouldn't know
downtown,
this stuff?
I don't
You're planners, supposed to know all this stuff.
Downtown west has certain uses that are allowed, So if it falls within those uses that are allowed, it's basically just a building permit and you do what you do.
Oh, it's almost like it's not pre-permitted, but it certainly is an easier process.
Yeah, it's like building a house on a residential lot.
Now, I thought that Caltrans had determination within the airspace on either side to a certain...
They do have the right-of-way that extends past the physical road.
Okay.
But when it comes into properties like that and it's not an intersection, that's typically like if you got up to D Street there, that they're responsible 30 feet into D Street.
Okay.
I think it's 30, something like that.
Well, you ought to know that.
Yeah.
It's 8:30.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
And these kids who come, they become Americans before a lot of Americans become Americans.
Now, here's your host, Lars Larson.
Hey there, it's Lars Larson. Join me for the Lars Larson Show, weeknights 10 to midnight. Honestly provocative talk radio on KINS.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time, 8:36. We're back talking shop this morning with Miles Slattery. Miles, the housing stuff that's going on or isn't going on. Mm-hmm. Danny Johnson's got his, is that an old folks or is that?
Senior living, yep, 37 units.
Yeah, I mean, we see that along Myrtle,
yep.
Kind of chugging along pretty well. Is the fact that that's there and is going to be overlooking Cooper's Gulch, going to put any impetus or pressure on cleaning that thing up or getting the state folks to allow?
Have you been watching our council meeting?
No, why would I do that?
Just had to help you.
I got sleep I need.
So we just present, most people call that Cooper Creek, but we call it First
Sloop.
What
do you mean most people? It's Cooper's Gulch.
Well, the creek.
With Myrtle cutting it
in half.
I know,
but we're talking about the creek that comes up from Eureka Slough and goes all the way up to the high school.
We're talking about the place that always has the cut fence.
Oh, the Office of Education.
Yeah, the place that they're going to be looking down onto.
Oh, they've done a lot of work there.
Have you
been there recently? Yeah, so they went.
Are you guys allowing that to happen? Or are you helping
them? They're doing it. It's their property.
Well, yeah, I understand, but I know that the city has a certain jurisdiction over that area, too.
Yes, but from a vegetation removal standpoint, that's more of a resource agency thing. The only thing that we oversee, resource agencies, Department of Fish and Wildlife, Coastal Commission, those are resource agencies.
I see.
Regulators, I should say.
I see. It's not the Chainsaw Manufacturing Association.
No, it's not.
Okay.
And so we do it from a code enforcement perspective. When we get complaints and there's a private property owner or another government entity that is having issues with their property, it's very similar to
So who would complain that that was getting cleaned up?
No, it was the complaints of it having the encampments.
Oh, I see.
And those things again.
Please do something.
Yes.
Was what you guys were getting.
Yes, exactly.
But that's not you don't have much influence other than passing that.
Going to them. We assist them. We went with our social services, our uplift program, and went out to the folks prior to them cleaning it up and offered them resources about a month before that and said, hey, look, this is going to be cleaned up. And then it got delayed, and then we continued to go out there and try and give them resources.
So they have to go back there about every other day?
We were out there pretty often prior to that happening, yes.
Uh-huh. And now it's on the other side?
There's a little bit.
Major,
I think it's moved a lot.
Or is it just explosions of
TID? No, there's some issues over on TID across from Salvation Army, and that's
where they went to?
Kind of. I think some of them we accepted the services, some of them that we got into shelters or into housing, but not all of them.
Is there any, this morning, who was I hearing? One of the programs was talking about the percentage of the criminal element that also have used substance abuse, whether it was drugs of one form or another. I mean, a huge, huge percentage. When you go into those camps, or your folks go into your, because I'm sure you don't wear your fancy clothes.
No, I've
there.
Gotten, I mean, I go too.
Yeah. Do you find a lot of drugs?
So that particular area there, and I'm going to quote our outreach workers. So Robert and Larry are outreach workers. They're familiar with the community very much so, and they're at Free Meal, you know, all the time. So they know a lot of the community members that are experiencing homelessness. They've been into a lot of camps throughout, you know, this whole area. Robert actually works with the county, so he's been to camps everywhere. That particular one was really scary. Not a guy that scares easily, and there was some gang activity there, a lot of drug use.
Gang activity?
Yeah, believe it or not. So really? What I'm saying, I think that some of these cases, there is people taking advantage of those community members who are homeless.
Well, there's always been the predator
element.
I mean,
yeah. And so that one particularly, they usually typically can walk into an encampment and they'll say, hey, Robert, hey, Larry, something like that. And the story, as they told it to me while we were playing pool, was they walked in and they felt really uncomfortable because they weren't getting that at all. And it took a while. Somebody finally said, hey, Robert. And then they didn't feel as though somebody was going to.
So it was like a different subculture within that segment.
Yeah, especially that encampment there, definitely.
So when they get dispersed or pushed out or property rights, I mean, however we want to say and frame this.
But see, that's what I want. I want to make it clear. We are there to provide services, and each and every one of those individuals that were there, we could have put into a shelter. Each and every one of those individuals, depending on where they're at in their life, we could have put into housing.
But many choose not to.
Yeah, and whether that's because of a mental health issue or drug addiction issue or just not wanting to because of regulations. But it is not going, you know, we have spent the last three years.
Easy way to say it, it's not like it was in the 60s or the 70s.
Or even in the 90s and early 2000s.
So when they relocate and they choose not to take advantage of the services, do your folks continue to follow them? I mean, not individually like Big Brother, but to know where they are and then try to protect those properties?
100%. Our CSET people and our uplift crew, you know, there's certain times where people finally say, you know what, I'm fed up and I do want help, or I do want to take advantage of these. And so we're
property
constantly
owner
doing it.
Or
that's why we're at Free
individuals.
Meal.
Individuals.
Okay. That's why we're at Free Meal all the time.
Well, sure, that makes
we
sense.
We estimate about 80% of the folks experiencing homelessness are at Free Meal. And so we spend a lot of time there continuing to offer these services to folks.
There's a real visible spot coming into town, one second stoplight.
Are you talking about going out of town?
No, the Smo Bridge. I don't know what the road is called. If you take a right-hand turn, you go to the Smo Bridge across the streets. There, that building. And that whole side seems to be cleaned up and then messy, cleaned up, messy, cleaned up, messy.
On the 4th Street side?
Yes. Samoa Bridge, right? I don't know what is that?
255.
Yeah.
Is it below it?
No. As you're going on the road to get there from 4th Street on that corner. You got the 4th Street corner.
And you're making a right to go out to Samoa?
Correct, but right across the street there. You've got the gas station on one
side. Oh, the old...
Now you know where it is. Yes, that spot.
Okay, yeah. That is...
Clean, dirty. Is 100%. That the property owner doing that? Is that the city trying to clean it up?
Well, that's with our assistance, of course. But yeah, that property owner, there was a time where, you know, it was happening more frequently. So we have different programs. We have a facade improvement program, and then we have a crime prevention through environmental design program, and that allows all of our businesses to get up to $2,500 in a grant to either do some crime prevention through environmental design, whether it be security cameras, whether it be
but some of the gates
fencing,
that we see, some of the
those things, and then another $2,500 for facade improvement, which can be interpreted very similar. So they've taken advantage of that, and they've been really responsive. Like you say, you know, there was a time where it was bad for a long period of time, and when there's a problem, they've been responsive.
Because that's really the first place that a lot of folks coming in from the north see what is Eureka.
Yeah.
It's probably not the best calling card we could have.
Yeah.
KINS, News and and if somebody wants that information, where do they go?
They can call me, 707-599-2053. And for those who want to put my name
probably
in public spaces, use my cell phone number, not my office number.
Oh.
You can catch that one, can't
you? Yeah, I got it. Yeah. Now I just don't feel nearly as special. It's 844.
Hearty and healthy foods are abundant at Murphy's Markets. USDA Choice Boneless Beef Chuck Roast is now $5.99 a pound. USDA Choice New York Strip Steak, $15.99 a pound. And USDA Grade A Boneless Skinless Chicken Thighs are only $3.99 a pound. Complement this with a Greek salad, now just $7.99 a pound, topped with Kraft salad dressing for only $3.75 for a 16-ounce bottle. Murphy's Markets, more than a grocer, your neighbor since 1971.
Good morning, KINS. News and Information Time. It's 8:48. We're back talking shop this morning with Miles Slattery. Miles, lots of housing stuff. I'm certainly, if 2022 is going to be thought of anything, it would be discussions around housing.
Yes.
Plus, minus, up, down, left, right, all that kind of stuff. Number of significant projects that are in place, a number of sites that look like that they ought to be getting attention. Mm-hmm. If you drive around town, it's no big deal to see where some of these eyesores are. Are they treated the same? Or some of these that really, they look like bladers. I mean, just that simple.
Yeah.
Are those, is there any progress on those at all? Or is that private property and you just can't,
well,
there's nothing that is going on?
So there's, you know, we are somewhat limited. If they get to the point where it triggers abatement and we can start finding them, we do that. We treat everybody the same and make sure that we are on top of that. We do have, let's say, some residential occurrences where there's property owners that pay a certain amount for having a vacant and boarded building, and they just pay us that amount and they keep it vacant and boarded. And as long as there's not graffiti or other things that trigger more code enforcement actions, they can keep it that way.
So those are houses, or are those those commercial interest?
I mean,
or the same?
They're the same, but okay. Right now there's certain commercial properties that are in that state and they're slowly moving along. But
yeah, and some of them are really visible. You know, I mean, I don't think it would be any surprise to anybody going up and down 4th and 5th, you're going to find four or five of them that are just sitting there. And they just sit there and, you know, I remember when Rory Robinson was city manager in Arcata, he tried to declare a large area blighted. Does that designation cause something to happen or trigger? Or?
So there is a process that we could do as it relates to that. Typically, I haven't been a part of that process, but we have talked about it, about other properties. We haven't gone through that yet. Typically, it's more an abatement issue.
So it's property by property, not a district or a zone.
Yeah. You'd have to go after each property owner.
Okay. Because you look at that with the pressures that are there and the contentiousness that there is with parking lots also. Holy cow, just turn them into parking lots. People are going to be happy. You know,
you can also do eminent domain's an option too.
Yeah, but that's kind of like the big stick in the...
That is the big stick.
Yeah.
But there's, you know, if it gets to that level of needing a big stick, there is an eminent domain.
So what triggers that?
I would say how long it's been in that instance and if we've exhausted all of our other resources in order to address it.
So there's not, it's not codified or anything that
no.
After a period of time, whatever it is.
No,
or after
I mean, you could
contact.
Do it even for an interest. You know, I want to build a road on that property or I want to do this on
okay.
that property.
That's different, like expanding. Yeah, that. Yeah. But what we're talking about is different.
Yeah, because Caltrans doesn't often. You know, Caltrans has properties that have right-of-way agents and they have a boatload of them and they go around and say, we need to widen this road to this amount and it goes outside
of
our
right-of-way.
They've
got a lot of lawyers.
Yeah, and then they typically will pay a pretty penny to get access for more right-of-way, but if the property owners are stubborn, which has happened all the time, then they eminent domain it.
Yeah, if you're the last one and you think you got to buy,
And they'll say, yeah, now you don't get your money.
Yeah, now guess what?
How do you feel?
Yeah. So there's nothing, is that out of planning? Is that at the city council level? How do you determine, you know?
It would definitely be at a city council level. But I think that it's, you know, the staff that, you know, are addressing the issues and using whatever resources they can to get it fixed.
So with all the pressures and all this positive that's going on, and you've got these situations,
mm-hmm.
What's the holdup?
Well, I think
why not
really
start
it's
process?
It's really the property owner. I mean, we have you know, there's...
Yeah, but the property owners had most of these haven't sold in the last 6 months.
No,
right?
See, and that's the problem, is that there's a lot of interest in Eureka right now. I mean, if you look at the amount of development that's going on, and you look at the Sizzler, you look at, you know, that whole corner right there, and you have a lot of people coming to me, coming to economic development, saying, I want to invest in Eureka. They're looking at vacant property on the waterfront. All of those things, some of those are selling. Those same people are going to these property owners and saying, hey, I want, you know, to buy your property. And we can't control that. We can't say, you know, buy this. And I know for a fact that a lot of these properties that we're referencing right now have been offered well above market rate because they're so interested in their property and they're holding on to it.
Sounds like some of the similar things that we hear about in Old Town, too.
Yeah, I don't know if it's because of... I think Cal Poly affects that, because the way that Cal Poly has spent money on certain properties, and I think that they have overinflated. I think that's the reason why Eureka City Schools has overinflated their property. Shouldn't come from a government agency.
Get away. It's time to go home. See.